Petersfield Community Radio.
Hello, I'm Geoff Lacey.
And I'm Claire Venice.
We've been let out in the Petersphere.
And we're so excited to bring you...
The Peapod!
In this week's Peapod, we're recording in the garden at the Old Drum Pub on Chapel Street. We'll meet with the manager, Dean Lowe, to find out how he's kept things ticking over in lockdown and what measures he's taking now the pub is open.
Nikki Lahiri from Meon Valley Travel will also be joining us. We'll find out the latest on travel abroad, how to book holidays, and further information on those all-important air bridges.
The Petersfield Post's chief reporter, John Walker, will reveal what's going to be in this week's newspaper. You'll hear a new recipe exchange from Noni and another 60-second history from the Petersfield Museum.
We've also got an interview with Good Morning Britain's chief correspondent, Richard Gaisford, from young reporter Nina Venice. And with our regular features as well, we're bringing you another full and fun-packed Peapod.
If you love Petersfield...
I love the square.
It's a lovely, lovely town.
The hangers.
Everyone's welcome.
Then the Peapod loves you.
It's just a nice town.
Everything Petersfield is in the Peapod with Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey.
Hello, Geoff. How are you?
I'm very well, Claire. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's really lovely to be in this pub garden, isn't it, actually, with the sun shining down on us.
Yeah, it's an absolute treat. Now, I think we did 12... lockdown Peapods.
I didn't count. Did you count?
Yeah, it was the end of March.
Yeah.
And it seems a very long time since I've seen everyone, and it's great to be able to look in everyone's eyes and say hello and welcome.
Yeah, it is, actually. It's a little bit strange. I kind of got used to doing the lonely recordings at home with my gin and tonic, but actually this is far preferable.
We're in a nice sun trap here in the garden. I feel I'm getting a bit of a tan on my face.
Yeah, it looks like it.
So, restrictions changed at the weekend. You could have a haircut and you could go for a drink. Which one did you do?
Yeah, I went for the haircut.
Did you?
I did. I didn't mean to, actually. Thursday, I've sent a text to the usual hairdressing salon I go to just to say any chance of a haircut, thinking probably August, and got a reply back the same day saying, how about 1:15 on Saturday? So I said, yes, please, jumped at that. Had a lot cut off because I don't know when I'm next going to go back. But, it was really well done. I go to Salon 16. I know there are lots of hairdressers you can choose from in the Petersphere. But I've always gone there since Rosie opened the salon. Gosh, I don't know how many years ago now, 7, 8 years ago now. And they have set it up really well. You have your temperature taken before you go in. You then use the hand sanitizer. You wear your mask. There's a one-way system. Everything's cleaned down. Everyone seemed very happy to be back at work. They had their visors on. It was a little strange. I never find it relaxing actually going to get my haircut anyway. But it was a nice experience to finally get it cut. Which one did you do?
I went for a drink. As you can see, I don't really need much of a haircut, so I didn't feel that was really needed on the first day. And we'd actually received an invite to go to the townhouse. The townhouse weren't opening until the Tuesday, but Dom did a dry run. He invited customers who've done carryouts, supported him through lockdown. And we had an hour and a half slot between 4 and 5:30. We just went for a couple of drinks, sat at the table. They came to you, waitress service, that type of thing. And it was really, really pleasant. And I could actually get used to that way of doing things.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Now, lockdown's coming to an end, I suppose. It's just getting used to what everyone says is the new normal. And we just have to adapt and try and be as comfortable with it as we possibly can be.
And the other big topic in the town at the moment is the parking restrictions. Has it affected you at all?
I haven't been in town, actually, until this evening, which is now, it's gone 6 o'clock, so I don't have to worry about paying for parking fees. But no, I actually haven't been in town. I have obviously seen a lot on social media and heard a lot about it. But I've yet to experience it. You, Geoff, I imagine, have, working in town.
Yes, I work at the bottom of High Street, and right outside the branch, there were bollards. Lovely little store. I was on the phone to my area manager, and I said, I'm going to have to hang up. There was a car reversed into two bollards, pushed them out the way. They got out the car, saw the bollards under the car, and walked off.
With the car still parked there?
Car still parked there, brilliant. Yeah, but with two bollards under the car. I just couldn't believe. I think it's going to take a long time for it to sink in with people.
I mean, they are temporary. We don't know how long they're going to be temporary for, and I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Like all of this, it's a new way of living, and this is just another part of it. So, again, adaption is going to take a bit of time.
Yeah, I think this story is going to run and run, and we'll probably catch up with John about that later on when he joins us. Now, if there's anything you'd like to see featured on the Peapod, or if you would like to comment on anything we cover, then please do get in touch.
And if you have a venue or business that would like to host a recording of the show on a Monday evening, just let us know. Leave a voice message on Petersfield 555 500 or drop an email to pod@thepeapod.uk.
Coming up, John Walker will be here. Noni's latest garden visit yields a delicious treat, and we'll be talking to Dean Lone from The Drum.
The P stands for Petersfield.
It's like the best town ever.
The Peapod.
With changes to parking on the High Street, the Square and Lavant Street implemented over the last week, I imagine there's quite a lot to talk to John Walker about this week. And it's great to see him in the flesh. Hello, John, how are you?
Hello, Geoff. Nice to see you through the olive tree. Yeah.
You're looking very dapper in pink this evening.
I am in touch with my feminine side, yes.
So, how's your week been?
Well, it's been a mix of wind and rain, to be fair. I've given up with the beard, so there we go. It's all good.
I don't think a beard would have suited you.
No. It wasn't looking good, to be fair.
No. So, obviously, the big news in the town this week, which I'm sure is going to be in the paper, is the parking.
Well, yeah, it seems to fall into two camps, those who love it and those who don't. And at the moment, I think the people in the other camp, and the ones who don't like it, are winning the battle.
They seem to be very vocal, one would say.
And yeah, they're vocal, and they also, as you pointed out earlier, are not adverse to shunting the cones out of the way with their cars and parking anyway. So,
or parking under the parking restriction signs.
The county council have done it for the best of reasons, but I think they haven't thought it through properly, I don't think, just yet.
So. No, I was speaking to one of the traders up Lavant Street on Friday, and he thinks it's a good idea, but it's been rushed through.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, have you ever thought about a change of career, Geoff? Traffic management might be you. I'm just suggesting it. You get a nice yellow uniform on the traffic.
Well, so. Yellow is one of my colours, I tell you.
I can see that.
So, what else is going to be in the paper this week?
Well, Penns Road residents, through the lockdown, have had their picture taken on the doorsteps by a local photographer. And that's going to be 20-odd pictures in the paper of these guys. There's a little baby who was born during lockdown. There's the irrepressible David Weeks and all his glittering glory. Once again, making it into the paper. And, it's a nice... Are you laughing, Mr. Petersfield?
What's he been celebrating this week?
Well, no, I think he just celebrated having his picture taken again for the 18,000th time.
And so, is that doubled up with a David Burstall letter?
Well, David's very good, actually. He does like to send them again in case I forget. The cycle works over the road is closing and reopening. The people who've run it for a number of years are selling it. Well, the deal's been done. It's been sold. And it'll be reopening under new management sometime this week. I think it's nice because, obviously, bikes are going to be a big part of Petersfield's future. Yep. And that's my green bit over and done with.
Yeah. And anything else?
Yeah, unfortunately, it all got a bit heated on Saturday night down on College Street there. I think a few of the younger people had enjoyed the end of the coronavirus restrictions too much.
Right.
And the local constabulary came in rather hard, I believe. So there were, as they say, persons apprehended.
I actually saw two policemen up Rounds Walk Saturday.
Sorry?
I know. I think it's what we had.
On foot?
Yeah. I think it's what we had the rain.
You sure, Geoff? Yeah. So, what, you've given up drinking?
not nice to see.
Yeah, and I guess by definition now, officers have to drive to more places and unfortunately don't walk the streets anymore.
No.
And the final thing, sadly, is a very expensive statue at a beauty spot at Steep was stolen over the weekend. £18,000 worth of brass sculpture, which a local sculptor had donated and put up free so that people could admire it on the walk up to the Poet's Stone, was removed Sunday morning sometime. Very generously, he's appealed to whoever's got it to bring it back, and he's suggesting that it might have just been a jape after the pubs closed on Saturday night, and if people want to bring it back, no more will be said. But he's not ruling out the possibility that it's been flogged on into the art world or even melted down for the brass.
Right. Well, great to see you, John. Thank you very much for joining us in the Drum Garden this evening. You have a cracking week, and we'll speak to you very soon.
Next week.
Thanks as always, John. The Peterswell Post is out every Wednesday and costs 75 pence, so please get one with your weekly shop or subscribe to the digital version. And sculptor John T. Horowitz was actually speaking to The Morning Report on Tuesday, the 7th of July.
Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey in Petersfield's Peapod.
Noni is back visiting gardens to find delicious recipes. Watch out, she may be visiting your garden soon. This week, she pays a visit to Victoria Le Peur Trench's garden and gets offered soda bread. Then, to her surprise, Victoria pays her a doorstep visit.
So surprisingly, on this lovely sunny afternoon, I'm having another garden visit with my friend Victoria. And she has produced some beautiful smelling soda bread, which sadly, I haven't managed to be able to eat because I don't have the gluten. But my son has tucked in and has helped himself to half of it with butter. So I've asked Victoria for her recipe. So Victoria, how do you make this delicious food?
Well, it's incredibly easy. The first thing you need is 8 ounces of flour, some kind of bread flour, whole wheat, something flour, probably any flour would do. Put it in a bowl, add a teaspoon of sugar, a teaspoon of salt, 2 teaspoons if you're being naughty, a teaspoon of baking powder, just to give it a bit of a rise. Then get one of those tubs of yoghurt that you get, a sort of...
The big ones.
The big standard ones, yeah, big sort of circular standard ones. Half of that, plop it straight in. Can be natural yoghurt, can be set, can be runny, doesn't matter. Mix it up together. When it's a nice gooey mess, stick it on a baking tray with a bit of flour underneath. Pat it into a circle. Cut it with a knife so that it's in 4 quarters, because that lets the air through, I believe. Stick it in a hot oven, about 200 degrees. 25 minutes later, bread.
It looks beautiful. See, I can't even photograph it for the Peapod because you've eaten it. I'm gonna photograph that last little bit. So just tell us quickly again.
Okay, 8 ounces of flour, half a pot of yogurt, a teaspoon of salt, sugar, and baking powder. I've actually added some rosemary from the garden. Just chucked a handful of rosemary in. You just mash it into a ball.
Makes it look pretty.
It does look pretty and it smells really good. Just bash it into a ball and then sort of flatten it out into an oval, flat circle. Yeah. Cut it into four. Put the knife almost all the way through into four to give it some air. And then bake it for 30 minutes.
At what temperature?
200, 180, something like that.
So, William, what did you think of that?
It's nice, that. Yeah, I think I'd eat that all day. It's very nice.
Well done, Victoria. You've got the seal of approval from my son as well. So my gorgeous friend Victoria has done a wonderful thing. And she has made me some gluten-free soda bread. But unfortunately, having just delivered it to my house, which is a very, very kind thing to do, it looks a bit flat. How do you feel, Victoria?
Well, very disappointed, actually. It doesn't look like any soda bread I've ever made before. It has not risen at all. I'd love to know if anyone's got any theories as to why that is. I used, as recommended, oat milk with white wine vinegar in it, which is supposed to turn into a sort of buttermilk. I used gluten-free baking powder. I put salt in it. I have no idea, but it looks shocking.
So we're now about to taste it. It might taste good.
I hope.
It feels a bit solid. Let's see.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to try the...
Would you like some butter?
No, butter won't make this better. This is the most awful thing I've ever made since I was a child.
Well, there we have it. We are still looking for the ultimate gluten-free soda bread recipe. So if you have one, please let us know at Petersfield 555 500. Never mind. Thanks, Victoria.
Another time.
If you can help Noni find a gluten-free soda bread recipe or gluten-free bread recipe that works, please email pod@thepeapod.uk. And if you're enjoying the recipe exchange and have a recipe you'd like to share, do let us know. Preferably ones without cheese in would be best. If I like yours, I may give it a go.
As we mentioned at the top of the show, we're recording at the Old Drum pub this evening. And while it's lovely here outside in the pub's comfortable garden, just like a normal summer evening, we're about to find out from manager Dean Lowe how life at the pub has changed over the last few months and what he's looking forward to now the pub is open again. Hello, Dean.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Phenomenal, always.
So, how does it feel to be open to the public again?
Somewhat of a relief, actually. It's been actually very nice during the lockdown period. We've met a lot of new customers, new friends, and it's a bit of an old-school feel to the building and to the place. But now we're open, allowing people into the building, into the garden. There's quite a fresh, vibrant feel to it. Yeah, it's very nice.
So have you kept the pub going through lockdown?
Under huge duress. Well, initially, we started off by... I had a board meeting with the owner, Maria, and her husband, Max, who also part-owns the company and the business. And we decided, let's stay open. Let's see what we can do. What can we offer? And I'm fortunate enough to have a friend who's an egg farmer, and eggs were hard to come by. And over the period of the first couple of weeks, we sold a good few thousand eggs just through my friend in Petworth, Hallgate Farm. Very good egg farm, very good eggs, in fact. And people, it kind of grew from there. People came in, bought their eggs, realised we did coffees. So, oh, I'll have a coffee as well. Eggs were slowly usurped by coffees, then pastries. And it's just sort of grown organically through the whole 3 or 4 months. Till this point where we're now on to people coming into the garden having a beer and a glass of wine.
And so you've basically sort of created a new client base, really, then, through that, do you think?
Absolutely, 100%. According to Megs, who works at Megs Laxton, who works here, I'd never worked in this business prior to lockdown, so I didn't know the customer base. Apparently, 50% of the customers that are now utilising our garden, coming into the building, had never been in the building prior to lockdown. So a lot of people have latched onto the fact that what we're offering is something that appeals to them.
Yeah, that's brilliant that you managed to keep going through lockdown. What was the hardest thing about it?
Hardest thing about it, I guess, was a lot of the new customers we were gaining were desperate for the opportunity to sit inside a building, to sit outside the front, but obviously we weren't allowed to do any of those things. So I think the biggest challenge was advising people as to the do's and don'ts that we were advised by the government and then implementing it thereon. That was probably the biggest challenge, if I'm honest, yeah.
And what's been the most interesting thing that's happened during lockdown?
The most interesting thing that's happened, I would say, and it sounds cheesy, kind of the community spirit that people have shown. So all these new people we've met, new customers, friends, however you want to put it, have all shown this sort of resolution and this determination that, do you know what, it isn't great, there's not good... What's going on isn't fun. There's no vibrancy anywhere. But what they were doing is creating an element of vibrancy when they were visiting us, having a laugh, having a joke, having their coffee, creating routines for themselves. So I'd say that's probably the best thing that's happened out of all this, this sort of the community spirit that's bubbled to the top.
And how are you handling opening the pub again with the government guidelines?
With difficulty, again. Essentially, I've drafted up probably about 30 different documents and guidelines for customers, for staff. So we did a customer journey. I would walk in the front door. What would a customer expect? What are they allowed to do? What are they not allowed to do? What guidelines would they require? And we have to aim this at every element of society. not everybody understands, not everybody is happy to hand over personal details. But what we did do is we printed off a guideline for every customer about sanitising and what we're doing to protect them and what they can do to protect themselves. We sign every person that comes into the building in with their name, their postcode and their phone number. And all staff have signed off our GDPR ruling so that therefore, obviously, the information doesn't get passed anyway. It's just held as a static document if it's ever acquired. And another thing we've managed to do, referring back to the whole community spirit side of things, we've relied on people's good sense, and touch wood thus far, good sense has prevailed.
So are you open full-time now then? What hours are you open?
We're tiptoeing into this. Yeah. So currently we're Monday through Wednesday just doing 8 till 6, 8 a.m. till 6 p.m, and then till 9 p.m. for the theoretically busier days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and on a Sunday just till 5 p.m. It seems a bit scattergun, but we're learning in the same way that the customers are learning. We're developing, and I think as long as you're open with the customers and you let people know what you're doing and how you're developing, I think they're quite happy to move along with you and learn with you.
And how's it been over the last few days?
Really, really good. Not ridiculously busy, which in a strange way is a godsend. It's been busy enough that we haven't sat down, and the reception we've had from the customers has been fantastic. They're all just pleased to be here and adhering to all the rules. And there's not, I can't think of one incident where anybody has sort of flouted the rules. There's a couple of people have decided they would not wish to pass on their details, which is absolutely fine, but we've then stated, unfortunately, you can't come in, and you'll find the same anywhere you go. So yeah, it's been very positive. Even on Saturday, it was rainy, I believe. It seems a long way ago now. When it was raining, we still had 20 or 30 people scattered around, social distancing and doing everything they should be doing, but still enjoying themselves.
Well, it's really good to hear, Dean, and we hope it keeps, you know, continuing to thrive for you. Thank you so much for having us here. I can't tell you how lovely it is to be able to record a Peapod out and about in the Petersphere once again.
In the real world.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit strange, but it is really nice to be able to see my friends again and to come here to celebrate your pub. So,
brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers. The P stands for Petersfield.
I think it's an amazing place to live.
The Peapod.
Coming up, you'll hear Martin Bamford's Money News and Alan Kosh Saves You Dosh. But first, here's Susie with a weekly wild walk.
In this clip, coming from her writing cabin, Susie talks about her previous day's windy walk and asks what is Sussex's biggest robbery and who is Colin?
Wild walk today is very different again. I hope you can hear that the actual recording quality is vastly improved. It's because I tried to record actually on the walk, and the wind was just horrendous for July, and it would be ludicrous. You'd be really struggling to hear me. So that's one way in which it's different, but also making a virtue of a necessity, I've also done a bit of research for a change. So instead of being your ignorant walker, relying on you to tell me what I've just seen, I've actually looked up some of the history, and it's been absolutely fascinating. So where did I go? I went to see the Lupins at Terwick Church, St Peter's Church, Terwick, because I'd seen so many fabulous photographs on Instagram, mostly. Of course, I was too late, but there was still, you know, a sufficient number that it was still splendid to see. And even more, actually, because most of the Lupins had gone over, I was able to see what an absolutely fantastic wildflower meadow there is now. With all sorts, there was oxeye daisies, vetch, meadow cranesbill, still a bit, but of course the wind has decimated things as well, but also self-heal, all the things that I've been reading about in the garden jungle. It has actually sort of been there. And I'm also really excited. And the way down here to record this wild walk, I actually saw a cockchafer. And Dave Goulson, who's my new hero, as you all know, who wrote The Garden Jungle, his son has a cockchafer called Colin. So this is Colin too. It might be Mrs. Colin, I'm not absolutely certain. But anyway, I'm just beyond excited that I've actually got one in my wildflower garden in the back garden. Anyway, so blah. So I've discovered that the National Trust is actually making sure that the lupins go on. It's gone, you know, at least since 1938. So you probably all know about that. But so we walked, Richard and I walked with Rain yesterday as well, because he's much better on map than your trusty walker here. So we went through the lovely little church to the back, walked through past a giant oak tree that was absolutely phenomenal, and then turned right at the sort of I could grandly called it a pond, but there was an awful lot of effluent in it. Anyway, we turned right there and headed for Fining's house, which was gorgeous. So I didn't know this. I'm probably talking to you who all know this already, but I didn't even know it was there. So the main house, which looks Queen Anne to me, and I think it probably is, was owned by Sir Albert Braithwaite until his death in 1959. I don't know who that is, I must admit. But then it was bought by a friend of King Hussein of Jordan. The biggest ever robbery in Sussex occurred on the property in 1983, which was then £800,000 worth of jewellery, which was phenomenal then. And never seen again, and no thief ever caught. Then Kerry Packer bought it for his polo things. Packer's daughter Gretel was married on the estate, apparently. And then it was bought by Roman Abramovich. So that's my sort of footballing bit of excitement as well. And then when he got... Sorry, there's a lot of and then and thens, but that's storytelling for you. And then it was... part of his divorce settlement, and the size of the estate was listed as 420 acres in 2017. So who knows? So anyway, I think what they're saying is that his wife got it. So I'm sorry about these bings. I've got some emails coming in and I was quite naughty. I'm down in my writing cabin. So excuse that. That's a bit of background. Instead of bird song, you've got my emails coming in. So what did we do? We went past the house. We went up to Terwick Common. We went all through where we're allowed to go on the Fining Hill estate. It's almost an arboretum. There's some really, really well-established, beautiful and different trees. Past undulating dingles, there was a perfect tree house. We walked past a bus stop with books that you could just take, and a bus stop that came to my knees, obviously for midgets. And then we walked on and there was a post box next to a telephone box, which had rainbows and thank you NHS and things on. It was absolutely lovely. And then we went through another deep holloway on the right, really, really deep, that was covered. It was like Bajazet Central. It was phenomenal. And if you looked over on your right, there was a really deep rounded valley looking across to the downs. Absolutely beautiful. So there you are. The walk itself probably took 2 hours. It's easy to do. I mean, just follow your nose. And we ended up back in the lay-by where we had parked our camper van Lois. So it wasn't the walk itself that was so interesting, but very much the things that we saw. So I hope you've enjoyed this little ramble and, for a change, a little bit of history.
Thanks, Susie.
It's time for another of our regular features as Martin Bamford from Informed Choice brings you up to date with the latest financial news.
A payment freeze for certain types of consumer credit is extended until the 31st of October. The financial support for people who are struggling with the impact of the coronavirus pandemic applies to motor finance, buy now, pay later, rent to own and pawnbroking schemes. Christopher Woolard, interim chief executive at the FCA, said it is vital that people facing temporary payment difficulties because of the impacts of coronavirus get the assistance they need. For those who have already taken a payment freeze and can afford to start making payments, even partially, it is in their best interest to do so. But for those who need help, it will be there. Average house prices have fallen over a year for the first time since December 2012. The latest nationwide house price index shows UK house prices down by 0.1% in June compared with a year earlier. On a month-by-month basis, prices fell by an average of 1.4%. The Building Society said the outlook for the housing market is highly uncertain over the coming months. Recipients of tax credits are being urged to check their renewal notices carefully after a mistake made by HM Revenue and Customs. More than 1 million of the tax credit renewal notices were issued with incomplete information. HMRC has apologised for the error and says the mistake does not change the calculations for proposed tax credit payments. Holiday refunds are unlikely in the event of going into self-isolation, according to Resolution Service Resolver. It means that holidaymakers will bear all the risk when booking overseas travel if they are forced to cancel their trip due to coronavirus symptoms. Alex Neal of Resolver said, "It is likely that new travel insurance policies won't cover you if you develop symptoms before going on holiday, and if the flight or packaged holiday isn't cancelled, then you have no automatic right to compensation." Workers in shutdown sectors may face a lifetime of playing catch-up as coronavirus hits their savings, which were already lower than employees in other UK industries. According to the latest Scottish Widows Retirement Report, before coronavirus devastated the global economy, many workers were already struggling to save for retirement. Its annual research of more than 5,000 adults in the UK revealed that more than a quarter of those who work in travel and the arts have not yet started saving into a pension. They also found that 67% of retail workers are worried that if they ever did retire, they would quickly run out of money.
Thanks, as always, to Martin and the team at Informed Choice.
We've been talking a lot about parking in the Peapod and on the Morning Report, and it can be a nightmare and expensive. Well, fear not. Petersfield Community Radio's Alan Kosh is here with a solution.
Bish, bash, bosh, Alan Kosh will save you dosh.
If you're like me, nothing more annoys me than the cost of parking our cars, no matter where we travel these days. How many of us in particular moan about the cost of hospital car parks, for instance, or airport parking? Well, a money-saving app that can radically reduce the cost is called Just Park. That's spelt J-U-S-T-P-A-R-K. When visiting a hospital, for whatever reason, we are never sure how long we will be. 1 hour, 2 hours, 5 hours. So your cost can range significantly and be very expensive. I've just gone into the Just app and put in Queen Alexander Hospital as my destination. Up pop many alternative places to park with the cost and the availability. The locations are private drives belonging to private people, although there are also commercial spaces. You simply enter the date, the length of time you want, and pay. They even show you a satellite picture for the property. I can book a space for tomorrow within 4 minutes' walk of the hospital from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. for £5.20. Now, the QA car park would cost you £8.20 for the same 6 hours, a saving of £3. If you want a 24-hour stay, the private cost is £7.70, whereas QA is £18.20, a saving of £10.50. I discovered there are dozens of private places to park near airports. I looked at a week's booking near Gatwick, for instance. That was as little as £21, within a 5-minute taxi drive to the airport. Add the cost of the taxi, £9 each way, and you were still looking at a massive saving in the order of £25 to £35 for the week, as the cheapest airport parking costs were anything from £68 to £79 for the week. And don't forget, when we are back at places like one of my favourites, Twickenham, for major events, there are again hundreds of private places to park around the ground, as is the case for many major venues. So there it is. Simply get yourself your own car park. Well, that's it for this week. And yes, you've guessed it, Just Park is free. Happy motoring. Every little helps. Goodbye.
Bish, bash, bosh, Alan Kosh. We'll save you dosh.
Thanks, Alan. We'll bring you more dosh-saving tips next week. Coming up, Helen Adams has a mindful moment, as I'm sure you do quite often, Geoff.
Many.
And we'll talk to Nikki Lahiri from Me on Valley Travel. But first...
Nina Venice recently had a careers week at school and was asked to interview someone about their career and how they managed to get where they are today. Who better to interview than Good Morning Britain's chief reporter and one of Petersfield Community Radio's co-founders, Richard Gaysford.
Before we go back to how you started your career, did you always want to be a reporter for TV, or did you want to be a rock star?
Never a rock star, because I can't sing very well. Never a footballer, because I can't play football very well. But I did think about being a pilot when I was much younger. But then I discovered I had quite bad eyesight, and I wasn't very good at maths, and those two things would have precluded me. So very, very early on, I ruled that out, and then I was pretty much fixed on being a reporter.
So what A-levels did you take?
I took English, History and Geography, and I have to say I did very badly. And probably doing badly was a good thing for me, because it meant I had to get on and work and use the experience I'd built up at Hospital Radio to get out there and actually do something for real. And I needed, because I wasn't good enough to get into university with my A-level results. I hadn't taken my exam seriously enough. So I didn't go to university, but I did study a postgraduate diploma in broadcast journalism. So that is something that you would ordinarily do having graduated from doing a degree course, and you'd then specialise in broadcast journalism. For me, I'd worked for a couple of years after leaving school, and I'd shown the determination to do the job. And the course leaders thought I had something going for me. So I went and studied at Falmouth and did the broadcast journalism postgrad, which is a year-long course, and it's industry recognised. And it's brilliant because it gives you all the background information you need on being a journalist, from going to court, reporting on local government, taking shorthand, the rules and the ethics of interviewing people. So some really useful information, enough to get yourself a job when you come out.
Yeah, so what was your first job?
So outside of... college. I had been, before, I'd been working in local radio, reading the travel news and reading some news bulletins. Then I went to work for ITN, which stands for Independent Television News, but I worked in their radio department to begin with. Then I moved into television as a real junior. And from there, I went to college. And I continued to work in newsrooms whilst I was at college. And then when I left, I wanted to be a reporter. And my course leader said, really, you have to start in local television. And I had job offers in national television, but also in local television. And I decided to start local so I could make all my mistakes somewhere else.
Your career as a reporter must have taken you to some incredible places. What was the most exciting event you reported on?
I've done so much that's been exciting, and so many things that have happened. And I've just gone, wow, afterwards. I think probably the Chilean miners in 2010, who were stuck, you know, a mile underground and had to be dug out. And I was there in the Atacama Desert waiting for them to come out, along with a lot of other journalists from all the way around the world, in the most inhospitable conditions. It's one of the hottest places on Earth. At night, it's very, very cold. It's very dry. And it was just amazing to see this rocket-like structure bring these men out of the ground to their families who are waiting. So that was exciting. I've done wars. I've done so many natural disasters. I've done big events elsewhere. I can't tell you the best story I've ever done, but that's one that sticks out.
So what was the most dangerous?
Certainly, I mean, I've done a number of conflicts and hostile environments, which is when you're never quite sure what's going to happen and who might be causing you trouble. And I was in Beirut in 2006, covering a war between Lebanon and Israel. And I was mistaken for an Israeli spy in the middle of Beirut, along with a producer. And we were attacked and we were held and we were taken away for a period of time. It was a pretty nasty situation. This is as close as I've ever come to knowingly dying. And it was, you know, it's something that stays with you. But I got out, which was great. You know, but it was a very close run thing.
So who do you admire?
I admire any journalist who goes out and tells stories. You know, I'm not so much into following people with big names just because they're famous. I think that any journalist around the world, and there are tens of thousands of them, who are, you know, often risking their lives, but working in difficult conditions, bringing important stories. It's an admirable thing, you know, and Sometimes it can be just somebody on Twitter breaking a news story. Sometimes it could be a very well-known correspondent on the television saying something quite incredible and showing it. Anyone that does the job, really.
So where do you see yourself in your career in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, you know, I don't know. I always thought maybe I'd only do this for a short period of time because it would be, you know, other people would want my job and it might be a bit tiring, but I love it so much and I keep doing it. And so probably in 5 years, I would hope to still be doing it. If in 10 years they'll still have me, I'll be doing it. It's changing all the time. The technology is changing. The way we broadcast is changing. And that's exciting too. So the news stories change every day. That's the great thing about it. Wherever you're going in the world, you're telling a different story. So it is something that stimulates you quite a lot. So it's quite hard to give up because, you know, an office job where you're doing a similar thing day in, day out for years on end could be quite repetitive. But I have a job that changes every day. It's amazing.
Thank you very much.
Great.
The Peapod Events Guide. What's on in the Petersphere?
The wonderful volunteers at Petersfield Community Radio are still making great audio. So while we all wait for more events to attend, have a listen at petersfieldradio.uk.
Councillor Rob McCatter, in conversation with Claire, explains what decisions the county and district councils have made about parking and street restrictions as part of the town's response to distancing requirements, as well as arrangements for disabled parking, free parking and access to shops.
Find out where Susie Wild goes on her wild walks every week and the thoughts they provoke for her. With her faithful friend Rain, they traipse the beautiful South Downs and sometimes beyond. This is Speech Radio at its most pure and enjoyable.
And the Morning Report is your Monday to Friday update full of essential local information for Petersfield and its villages. Tune in to find out the latest news and interviews around the Petersphere.
You'll find these and more audio at petersfieldradio.uk or search Petersfield on your favourite podcast app.
If you're running an event, get it in the guide. Just email pod@thepeapod.uk.
There's been a lot in the news about travel and holidays recently. Words such as air bridges and travel corridors being spoken about and quarantine-free travel between the UK and low-risk countries. What exactly does it all mean? And is it safe to go on holiday now lockdown restrictions are being lifted? Nikki Lahiri from Meon Valley Travel is here with us to answer these questions and more. Welcome, Nikki. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you all?
We're very well. Lovely to be out and about.
It is.
Now, we've met you a couple of times earlier in the year. How has the pandemic affected Meon Valley Travel?
It's obviously affected us in a few ways. We had to relocate the whole team to be working from home. So even though the shop has been closed, the whole team has been working from home. We were busy initially repatriating people and then rearranging holidays. And 2 weeks ago, we actually reopened the shop and we are getting busy and seeing people come in wanting holidays now.
With government guidelines changing all the time, and with an update last week, if we wanted to go on holiday abroad, where can we go?
You can travel a lot more extensively now. The government has published a list of places that you can go to. The main thing to bear in mind, though, is the quarantine restrictions of the countries that you're going to, and also that quarantine has now been lifted for when you return to the UK if you travelled to countries that they deem to have been safe countries. So countries like Germany, France and Spain, at the moment you can travel to without any restrictions when you enter the country or when you leave the country. And we're hoping more countries are added to the list, and that is something that we are keeping an eye on constantly.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
Can you explain what a travel corridor and an air bridge is then, please?
Well, the travel corridors and air bridges are essentially the countries that you can go to without needing to quarantine. So some of them you don't need to quarantine when you arrive, and then when you arrive back into the UK. Other countries, like New Zealand, you will have to quarantine when you arrive. But when you travel back to the UK, you don't need to quarantine. But as a company, we're keeping a close eye on what countries are in the list of safe countries and what restrictions would apply should you travel to them.
Yeah, the guidelines do seem to be changing quite quickly. It must be quite a thing to try and keep on top of it all. Have you had a lot of customers inquiring about places they can travel to and restrictions and so on?
Yes, we have. And that is one of the things that has been quite common throughout the whole situation with the changing guidelines and advice. And we have had to keep a close eye on it. But that's something that we do, obviously, on a daily, hourly basis with all the changes that are taking place. But lots of people are now wanting to go on holiday, both in the UK, where the restrictions have been lifted, and also abroad.
So have you noticed an increase in bookings in the last week or so?
Oh, yes, definitely. We have been open throughout, but just working from home. But since the shops opened, we've had more people visiting, people getting in touch by WhatsApp, Zoom, Facebook, Instagram. So there's so many ways that people have been communicating with us that we have got inquiries through and made bookings.
How about holidays closer to home? As everyone knows, I go to Swanage every year. What are the guidelines for going on a staycation?
I think going on a staycation, the guidelines are the same as if you were travelling abroad. So make sure you've booked with a company that you're financially protected, and also a company that you trust, so that the accommodation adheres to the new hygiene standards. We've seen a massive increase in staycation bookings. We've got lots of lodges and even castles and boats close to home that people have been inquiring about. So yeah, same. Enjoy your staycation.
Yeah, we've had our arrival details and things like that. Now, normally we could get in the apartment for 3 o'clock, but because they're doing a deeper clean, we can't go in till 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yes, that's quite standard. Everyone will notice, whether you're going abroad or staying at home, there's changes to your holiday routine. But I think you've just got to embrace them and enjoy it and be glad that you're actually getting on holiday.
Oh, very much so.
Well, thanks very much, Nikki. It's been wonderful to have you back here, and we look forward to all going on our holidays very soon.
Yes, come and see us. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Nikki. Bye.
And if you have any further questions for Nikki and her colleagues at Meon Valley Travel, you can contact them via their website, meonvalleytravel.com.
Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey in Petersfield's Peapod.
Have you got an attitude of gratitude? Helen Adams is here with another Mindful Moment.
Hello, I'm Helen, and welcome to this week's Inspirational Wellness Moment. Today's topic is gratitude. Sometimes we forget to take the time to appreciate the richness that defines our lives. Richness or abundance can come in many forms, such as joy, health, freedom, time, wealth, love, or spiritual connection. The order of importance of your list of abundance may fluctuate throughout your life. Probably right now you could think of an area of perceived lack as you hear this. We're often guilty of focusing on what we feel we may not have enough of. And it's easy to fall into a comparison with others or to feeling we don't have enough. But no, there will always be someone in this world we think is wealthier, more confident, fitter, or happier than us. And thinking in this way, existing in a perpetual desire for more of something, can easily distract us from what we truly do have. Adopting an attitude of gratitude will really lift your spirits. Begin a practice of truly appreciating what you already have, your good qualities, and the many personal possessions you could love and appreciate even more. Really pay attention to the precious wonders of your life, however small. If it helps, write them down and stick it up somewhere as a reminder. Mentally list 10 things you are grateful for just before you drift off to sleep. Even small important things like a smile you received or your last cup of tea. When you allow gratitude to flood your heart, it's accompanied by a wave of self-compassion. Savor this, and above all, start the life-enhancing practice of appreciating your life with renewed grace.
If you'd like to listen to more relaxing and stress-busting meditations, do head over to Helen's page on Facebook, or you can reach Helen at peacefulmassage.co.uk.
We've been really enjoying the Petersfield Museum's 60-second histories, where members of the museum team select their favourite objects and stories from the collections and share them. This week's history is from Ryan Watts, and it's about Petersfield's Corn Exchange.
Along the High Street, the shops Cubitt & West, Richard Arnold and Constad Jewellers occupy what used to be one single building, the Corn Exchange. The Corn Exchange was built in 1866 at the cost of £2,000 to accommodate the buying and selling of dry goods, including corn. It was designed in the Italian style with a lantern roof, circular-headed windows and a carved keystone, which can still be seen today. It measured 90 feet in length and 34 feet wide, with its main entrance facing the square and two further doors along the High Street. The address for the Corn Exchange was therefore on the square, not the High Street, and is the reason why, number one, the High Street is where the newsagent's Roswell's is and not closer to the square. The corn market was held in the hall on alternate Wednesdays, and so the hall was available for other uses the rest of the time. These uses included acting as a drill hall for the volunteer corps. The county court sat in the hall before the magistrate's court was built in 1893 behind the police station, as a church hall, and even to hold services when St. Peter's was being reordered in 1873. The large open hall made the Corn Exchange ideal for use for social events and entertainment, including public meetings, rummage sales, concerts, plays, pantomimes, fencing and boxing matches, and at one time it even housed a circus. In the 1930s, the building was sold and it was converted into shops with an upper story.
And that's it for a busy and informative Peapod. Thank you for joining us. To our guest Dean Lowe at the drum and Nikki Lahiri from Meon Valley Travel and the fantastic team of volunteers at Petersfield Community Radio.
If you'd like to get involved in Petersfield Community Radio, do get in touch. As we mentioned last week, auditions are going to take place very soon. So if you're interested in being a part of the project, get in touch quick.
It's great fun and you'll meet some lovely people and potentially learn a new skill.
And if there's something you think should be featured on either the Morning Report or the Peapod, please let us know. We're on Petersfield 555 500 or email us at pod@thepeapod.uk. And we're also on the main social media apps too.
Join us again in the Peapod next week, where we'll be recording at a location near you.
So from all of us in the garden at the Old Drum...
Bye! Bye.
The Peapod is produced by volunteers at Petersfield Community Radio.
Hello, I'm Hugh Bonneville, and if you want to keep in touch with everything that's happening in and around Petersfield, the team at Petersfield Community Radio is here to help. The Daily Morning Report is full of essential local information, and the Peapod brings you personalities and real human stories every week. Find them all at petersfieldradio.uk.